Kusham Atharva. The four Vedas. Akhyan. Of the name. Vedan. Vedic literatures. Purva Adibhi. Beginning with the front. Mukhae. By the mouth. Sastram. Vedic hymns not pronounced before. Ijam. Priestly rituals. Stuti stomam. The subject matter of the reciters. Prayasitam. Transcendental activities. Vedhat. Established. Karamat. One after another. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maitreya said, beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sam, and Atharva, became manifest. Therefore, Vedic hymns which had not been pronounced before, priestly rituals, the subject matters of the recitation, and the transcendental activities were all established one after another. You can repeat. Maitreya said, beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva became manifest. Thereafter, Vedic hymns, which had not been pronounced before, priestly rituals, the subject matters of the recitation, and the transcendental activities were all established, one after another. So there's no commentary. So I read again. So the Maitreya said, beginning from the front face of the Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sham, and Atharva became manifest. Thereafter, Vedic hymns which had not been pronounced before, priestly rituals, the subject matters of the recitation, and the transcendental activities were all established, one after another. So remember yesterday, you know, Vidur was asking, you know, Maitreya Muni. So Vidur was asking to kindly explain to me how and with whose help Brahma established the Vedic knowledge which emanated from his mouth. So here Maitreya is answering. See, the Brahma is the first living entity in the universe. There are unlimited universes, and also there are unlimited Brahmas. But the Brahma, which is associated with our this universe, he has four heads, four faces. The Brahma, who is associated with our universe. But there are many Brahmas which have 100 heads, 1,000 heads, 1,000,000 heads, like that, according to the size of the universe. Even our universe is not very big. It's a very small universe. So that's why Brahma has only four faces and four heads. So that, so here, in this particular universe, we have these four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sham, and Atharva, four Vedas. So these four Vedas are the foundation of all Vedic knowledge. Everything is there that one needs to know. The material knowledge, spiritual knowledge, everything that is completely given, in these four Vedas. So just by understanding, of course, these four Vedas are so vast that you have to be born several lifetimes in order to be able to read these Vedas. One lifetime is not sufficient to understand it. Maybe several lifetimes. So Vedic literature is so vast, and it's like ocean. unlimited ocean of knowledge. And so here Maitreya is answering that these Vedas became manifest from Brahma's mouth, you know, four mouths, really in this universe, four Vedas. And so all the, everything is came, comes out from the transcendental mouth of Lord Brahma. So, and sometimes, you know, you might wonder who is the Lord Brahma, and you know, what is his activity, and why, you know, he has to you know, transmit this message. See, Brahma actually, sometimes, you know, in Christianity, you know, this Trinity is there. So similarly, in this, sometimes people call Hinduism, like in this conference in St. Petersburg, you know, people are talking about Hinduism. Then Brahma, so the Brahma, actually Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Now Mahesh is Lord Shiva. So these three are regarded as a Trinity also in Indian concept. So Vishnu actually is the supreme source. Then Brahma and Shiva is a more powerful demigod. And Brahma is also a demigod. But these personalities are established actually by Vishnu himself to execute certain functions, you know, certain roles in the cosmic manifestation. Like, so that's why Brahma is empowered, you know, to create this whole cosmic manifestation, to do that. So that is why the knowledge is to be given to him. Knowledge is to come from Vishnu's mouth, Vishnu's lotus feet. So Brahma, when he, you know, he was in his, in a conscious state, I mean, he just didn't know what to do about it. Although he's empowered by Lord Vishnu to create, so he had to do this transcendental meditation, not like the Maharishi's meditation. And this is a real one. Real transcendental meditation. And so he had to meditate upon the lotus feet of Vishnu. That is actually the meaning of transcendental meditation. You have to meditate, you have to contemplate on the lotus feet of Vishnu, you have to submit yourself, and so that the knowledge comes from him, you know, through the heart. So when he was meditating like that, so the Lord revealed to him all the Vedic knowledge. So that is why the four Vedas came. So the Brahma, you know, by his, by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, so he could create, you know, all these living entities, and you know, not only living entities, the whole cosmic manifestation, the planets, stars, and everything, you know, that are visible in this cosmic manifestation. So the Brahma, the universe that we have, it's a small universe. And so like that, it is given in the Bhagavatam and the other sources that there are unlimited universes. And there are also unlimited Brahmas, many, many Brahmas. So so it's not limited to one, to this universe. You know. So there are different Brahmas who might have more knowledge because they are... they have to control a larger universe, you know, greater than us, much larger than this present universe that we are experiencing. So it's actually inconceivable to our little tiny mind and intelligence that how these things might exist. But at least, you know, you can have some understanding just by, you know, reading the some of the informations given in the Vedic literatures. So that is how the Vedas came out, the Vedas came into being. Also yesterday we mentioned that you know, in the beginning of this Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, how the Vedic literatures came out is described very clearly, that but the information is given in the heart of Lord Brahma. Hideye adi kapache. In the heart of Brahma, the message of the Vedic literature is given. So That is actually the process of receiving the transcendental message. It's the same principle applies to us also. That in order to receive the transcendental message, one's mind has to be the frame of mind should be in such a way that it creates a fertile field of receiving the message. It's just like planting a small seed, and that seed will grow if the field is very fertile and it's very proper. It's very conducive to grow, let's say, a certain seed. Otherwise, if your mind or if your the mental frame is not prepared, then it won't grow. So that is why the Vedic knowledge won't be received. In the spiritual life, that the one's frame of mind, mental frame of mind, would be such that it is very conducive to receive that transcendental message. Otherwise, you don't grow. It will be always dry. Just like in a barren, dry land, nothing grows properly. But in a very fertile land, the rain comes and there's green grass and everything is lustrous green. It grows very well, very nicely. So similarly, our frame of mind will be such that it is always conducive to receive that transcendental message. So the way to do it is that one becomes very submissive, one becomes very subordinate to the inconceivable arrangements of Krishna, his nature. One will be able to appreciate, be able to understand the limits of his senses, the limits of his intelligence. That way the frame of mind is prepared properly to receive that transcendental message. So that is why this prayer or this meditation or contemplation at the lotus feet of Krishna comes when our mind is prepared that way. That way you see, this is some sort of a link. It is like a thread. It is like a small river. It's a link that links from a big reservoir. Reservoir is Krishna, and the living entities, small living entities, are little rivers. Coming out from that big reservoir. So the big reservoir, if the little river is very properly situated, always the source will come from that big reservoir of information. That's Krishna. So when that situation is created, then everything will come, unending, because the reservoir is unlimited. It is so vast that it is never exhausted. So when our mind is prepared in that way, then the knowledge will be transmitted properly. Actually, that is also the relationship between the master and the disciple. It's like that. You always submit to him, and then you can receive message, unlimited mercy coming from the master. And so that is how you establish this spiritual relationship. That is how you can hang on the path of devotional life, because there's the unlimited source of this mercy is coming from the master, and so you can stand in under all circumstances, either in danger or whatever the situation you may be in, but you can stand and you can bear it, and, but that strength comes only from the mercy of the master. So here, this dialogue is very important, that Maitreya Muni, this forms one of the bigger sections, the dialogue between Maitreya Muni and the Vidura, all the saintly dialogue, the dialogue between the master and the disciple, actually is very significant in our understanding of Krishna consciousness also. So the spiritual, the knowledge is received only by this way, by the proper dialogue. Not that you may be able to reach so many things, but actually the real knowledge will come just by hearing, by hearing from the proper source. Especially the dialogue between the master and the disciple. See, in all spiritual matters, has to be the knowledge has to be received like that. Otherwise, you may think that I'm a scholar in Sanskrit, and I'm a pundit. And just by reading all these things, I can just receive the knowledge, whatever is necessary. It is not like that. And it's especially in spiritual knowledge, there has to be direct association with the master. And then, you know, the master will speak, you know, by the mercy of Krishna. Although it looks like he's speaking, but actually Krishna is inspiring him to speak. And so that when the dialogue and the atmosphere is properly created, whatever sound vibration the master is talking, the disciple or the student is asking, but it's all in a transcendental. Although it may look like you're speaking, but actually you're not speaking. You know, Krishna is speaking through you. And so like that, so this Srimad Bhagavatam is like that. All these dialogues are all inspired by Krishna and all these great personalities. So we should take it that way. That way we can learn a lot of things, and we can also mold our own life in development of our spiritual advancement, so that we can be guided by these principles, so that we can understand all these intricate aspects of devotional life. So these dialogues are extremely important to understand. And also, you see, when you inquire, so the duty of the disciple, the duty of the student is that always to be anxious to inquire, to ask questions, but the mood will be in such a way that he's always wanting to receive the message, always in a submissive and a very humble way. That way, you know, the master will be inspired, and the master will give answer, being inspired by Krishna's mercy. So that is how the spiritual message, you know, is transmitted. So that's why in early days, in the Vedic culture, there was no necessity of being put in written form. Once, you know, you have some question, and you put that question before the master, and the master answers you, then that's enough. Once spoken, that is sufficient. You can remember forever. So there was no need even to put in the written form. But that atmosphere is such that is completely undisturbing. You know, it's always conducive, you know, to receive that message. But now in Kali Yuga, you know, what happened is that, you know, everyone is so degraded. You know, there is no proper atmosphere. And so unless, you know, we read it many times, you know, we don't even remember. And to remember one Sanskrit sloka, you know, sometimes it will take years, because you know, there's no proper environment. But anyhow, somehow by Krishna's mercy, in this age of Kali, you know, we have the greatest gift. It's Harinama Mahamantra. At least we can remember Harinama Mahamantra. You know, so that's the greatest gift in this age of Kali. So whatever we are, whatever we do, is we should be always chanting. You know, you work in the kitchen or in whatever, you can always chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. There's no hard and fast rule. So that's the greatest gift in this Kali Yuga. So, but we should also understand that even that understanding comes from the spiritual master, you know, from the saintly people, by association with the saintly personalities. So that is why, you know, here, you know, also, you know, in San Francisco, here, you know, in the Bay Area, you know, we're trying to develop this, unique school of thought, I mean, of Krishna conscious living, you know, plain living, high thinking. I mean, it's very, one should be trained up how to be a noble man, you know, how to be a responsible man in the society, how to be a knowledgeable man, how to be well-rounded in all aspects of life. You know, to be able to stand on our own feet, you know, be, you know, very responsible. So we have to show that exemplary symptoms to everyone. So that is why, although it looked like, you know, we have this is a small beginning, but I think we have a great mission. You know, we have a great duty, responsibility, you know, to do that in the whole society. So we should try to, you know, see these things very properly and cooperate, you know, very nicely, and then try to do what is best, you know, to make these ideals, these visions, you know, manifest properly in time, so that we can render some service to Prabhupada, we can render some service to the Vaishnavas, and so that our life will be perfect. So, any questions?
There are unlimited universes. universes are unlimited brahmas, are there likewise unlimited shivas and all the other demigods?
Yeah, in this universe, there's a shiva there. Shiva, Brahma, and Vishnu. These are three personalities who control the whole universe.
But are there unlimited
Brahma? I said the shiva, yeah. It should be, yeah. It should be by Brahma. Shiva is responsible for annihilation. At a time of pralaya, that's Shiva's duty. There will be Mahapralaya, means complete annihilation of the material universe. So, and that the duty is given to Shiva.
So, but there aren't unlimited other demigods as well?
See, in this universe, all these demigods there, I do not exactly know how to say that, but I can speculate that since there are those demigods in this universe, so it should also be demigods of the universes. Just that for that matter, there will be unlimited demigods. Actually, the demigods are unlimited. And demigod definition is very vast. Even a devotee is called a demigod. Demigod means one who has the godly quality. And when one becomes a devotee, he has developed all the godly qualities. So he's actually a demigod. Actually, all the Vaishnavas are regarded as demigods. And they have good understanding. They're all Brahmins. They're all Vaishnavas. Their duty is how to worship the Lord. So anybody who worships, who has that understanding, actually is a demigod, the broad definition. But then among the demigods, there are different responsibilities given to run certain the society. Just like in our society, we have several categories of responsibilities. And similarly, to run the universe, these demigods are posted to execute certain functions. Actual original Vedas? Well, Vedas are already...
We know what Vedas come as far as 15 part of the
Hayagriva. So you have been answered.
No.
Just have to accept it like that, don't
you?
Accept it just like it is, huh? You breathe the whatever.
Well, it comes in different forms, you see. Depending on the strength of meditation of the individual, but ultimately the source is coming from Vishnu. But somehow according to your devotional strength or the desire that you have, the knowledge is revealed in different ways. It's like here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada told me one time that the answers to one question can be the answer can be many, but it says the duty of the master, like in this case, like the Supreme Personality is the Supreme Spiritual Master, so he's answering or he's giving the answer according to the quality of the inquirer. So similarly, in our spiritual dialogue also, that depending on the quality of the student, one answer can be, can have different answers. Can be answered in different ways, like even creation, but the creation of the universe. Prabhupada told me that there are many, many different answers given by Sukadeva Goswami according to the nature of the question.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, I presume that according to the mentality and the strength of contemplation, devotion of the individual student or disciple or Vaishnava, that the answer can be different. But ultimately what we have to understand is that it's coming by the, you know, from the mouth of Vishnu or from the inspiration of the Supreme Lord, you know, Krishna. Krishna says, I am the Veda, and I am the knower of the Vedas in the Bhagavad Gita. And so I think if we have that understanding, so, you have any questions on?
I'm just wondering, what's the best way to control the mind?
To control the mind?
Yeah.
In order to control the mind has to be always engaged in the devotional service. Mana, mind is called mana. So, to control the mind is called bhaja, bhaja hure mana. Always by submitting to the lotus feet of Vishnu, by engaging the mind, the lotus feet of Krishna, Vishnu, then the mind can be controlled. Of course, that may not be so easy. So in order to make that happen, you have to follow the, you know, these regulative principles in the basic devotional life, and then always chanting. The mind has to be always engaged in chanting and singing about the glories of Krishna. That's actually the only way to control the mind. You have to always engage the mind in glorifying. And glorification comes in different forms. And glorification of the Lord comes in so many different ways. That's like you're working in the restaurant. That is also glorifying. You're serving for Him. Because the goal is just to, you know, ultimate purpose is to serve Him, whatever, you know, capacity that you're doing. So don't think that, well, I'm washing dishes and I'm just cleaning the floor like that. So I'm not doing, you know, I'm not engaging my mind properly, Krishna. But you are engaging properly, but in a very nice and humble way, that, you know, whatever little service that I'm doing is to satisfy Krishna, to serve Him. So that way, if your always mind is thinking like that, then always be, you know, you'll be always in ecstasy. And but the moment you feel that, well, my mind thinks that, well, you know, this is a very low-grade job, I don't really want this, let me run away. And my mind wants to, you know, go somewhere and swim and do all kinds of exciting things. But that is not the proper frame of mind. So the mind is, in the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes, you know, the mind is compared like a wild horse. But if you can control the horse, you know, by intelligence, the mind is controlled by intelligence, then the horse can be useful. Mind has to be, you know, very cooperative. But if you cannot control it, then it will be like a wild horse. You know? It will be running away here and there, and it will be very difficult. So Gita says, the mind becomes the greatest friend if you can control it. But otherwise, it becomes the greatest enemy if you cannot control it. So in Krishna consciousness, our first business is how to train the mind so that it becomes friendly. That is why you cannot force the mind. You have to train him. You have to mold him. You have to nurture, you know, the mind. You have to, you know, handle the mind in such a way that he always is friendly with you. And that is actually one of the secrets of advancement in Krishna consciousness. The mind has to be controlled very properly. And the only medicine of controlling the mind is being engaged in the devotional service. So there are 9 processes of the devotional service. And the Sarvanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, these are some of the main ones. That you should always remember Him, you should always chant Him, you should always sing about the glories of Krishna. Kirtanam, it's called Kirtanam. Kirtanam means chanting and singing. Just like japa chanting is also kirtanam. And smaranam, you know, you shall always remember. You shall always remember Him and all these things. And then the other processes. So just by being engaged like that, you'll be able to control the mind. And you should always associate with the devotees. generalized in the company of the devotees called sadhu sangha. By being engaged in sadhu sangha, the mind can be controlled. That's right, but that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings. Mind should be always engaged in those nine processes of bhakti yoga. Sarvanam, kirtanam, smaranam, pada sevanam, dasyam, atmanivedanam. Atmanivedanam means you have to sacrifice, you have to submit everything at the Lord's feet of Vishnu. So, just by developing that desire and that understanding, we can control the mind. So is that clear?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how are you feeling in your Krishna conscious activity?
Oh, I feel pretty good. Trying to get in, you know, a lot of reading, trying to do my chanting, trying to get that done pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to stay regulated too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stay fixed.
Yeah, that's very important. You see, human life is very precious. You know? This human life, you never know when it's going to come back once you finish this. And we don't live too long, at the most 100 years. And so in this human life, you know, there's a very nice song sung by Narottam Das Thakur. You'll be hearing a lot of these songs as you proceed in Krishna consciousness. So in that song, called the Prema Bhakti, you know, the song of Prema Bhakti, you know, it's love of developing love of Godhead. You know, the song says, he says, I quote this many times, said, he says, Manusha Janama Paiya, this is a Bengali, Manusha Janama Paiya means when you get this human form of life, Manusha means human form of life, Manusha Janama Paiya, Radha Krishna Na Bhojiya. If you do not worship Radha and Krishna in this human form of life, and he says, janiya shunya vishakainu, means you are simply drinking poison, knowingly, not unknowingly, but said you are simply drinking poison knowingly. So he said, if you do not worship, if you do not develop this devotional life in the human form of life, then you are simply drinking poison knowingly. So if you drink poison, you know, unknowingly, that's one thing. You didn't know about it. But now if you drink poison knowingly, this is suicide. So that is the, you know, that is the guideline. That's a very, very nice song. And then next stanza says, Golokero Premodhono. You know, Golokero Premodhono Harinam Sankritana. Golokero Premodhono means they say the Golokero Premodhono. Premodhono means the treasure wealth of love and the devotion. Prema dhana. Prema means love. Dhana means wealth. That the treasure wealth of love. From where? From Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka means Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan is the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where he exhibits his pastimes, leelas, and always in ecstasy. You know, always, everyone is, you know, in the transcendental ecstasy. So that treasure wealth of from Goloka Vrindavan is that it has descended like in the form of Harinama Sankirtan. So that has descended in this planet in the form of Harinam, you know, this Maha Mantra, you know, chanting. You see. That is why, you know, this is the treasure, that treasure wealth of Goloka Vrindavan is this Harinama Sankirtan. So that has descended now in this age of Kali, on this planet. So just by chanting that Harinama Sankirtan, then you'll be taken to the Goloka Vrindavan, so that you'll be completely free from all these, you know, these pains and miseries and worries of all these worldly entanglements. You know, it's called worldly matters, and be completely free, you know, from all these miseries, and be situated in your Satchidananda, in your original transcendental, eternal and full of knowledge, you know, that poison. You are, your natural quality is that you are an eternal living entity. your eternal personality, and you are full of knowledge, and also your identity is a, you should be always happy. Ananda means full of bliss all the time, eternally. That is our original identity of the spiritual nature. So that will be revived just by chanting this Harinam, Goloka Premarana Harinam Sankirtan, just by chanting this Harinam Sankirtan. So that is why in doing that, we do all different types of duties, this and that. So, but the ultimate goal is how to develop that type of understanding so that we can go back to Godhead, back to Goloka Vrindavan, ultimately. That is actually the aim of Krishna consciousness. So you please take it seriously. Not that it's just spending for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. It's not like that. Krishna consciousness, once you come to Krishna consciousness, you can never leave. It's not possible. You know, you may be away from the temple, but that's a very transient. But you always come back. You'll never forget. And so you are caught by Krishna. And it'll be always Krishna won't let you go. So anyhow, that is the understanding. You develop slowly the taste of nectar of Krishna consciousness. How about your name is
Chuck.
So how is Chuck feeling? You're feeling all right? You're getting in the prasad. So you are happy here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have a good scheme here, good plan to develop into a very Krishna conscious environment. Schools and colleges and universities, eventually we are planning to do that. And cultural schools and whole activities of life, but completely molded towards Krishna consciousness. So I think it'll be very nice to develop those things together. So anything else? Jai Namaste Guru Puja Time. Jai Gaur Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you. can follow his the tone. That's it. That's all. You can follow the meaning.
Thank you.